Tell me, though, about these three near-death experiences. What happened? How did you vision them?
Well, I'm a boy from the bush. As you can hear, I talk funny. I grew up in Australia. My great aunt was both a pretty good opera singer and a rather renowned medium in Australia in her day. She was the friend and understudy of the famous Dame Nellie Melba. When I was 3 years old and my mum took me on a train to West Australia to see her, she turned absolutely white reading the tea leaves in that old-fashioned way and would not tell us what she saw. Shortly after that, in Tasmania, in a very cold winter, I died for the first time. I lost vital signs. I came back. I have precious little recollection of what happened to me at three. I do remember that in those days we didn't have the phrase near-death experience. Raymond Moody had not come along and given us that helpful phrase. Right. The Australian doctors just said, "Oh, poor kid, he died and came back, didn't he?" What I do remember much more vividly is what happened to me several years later. I was 9 years old. I had an emergency appendectomy in a Melbourne hospital. I'd just been in hospital for pneumonia in both lungs. I was very weak. I remember very, very clearly, George, being out of my body in that operating theater and not wanting to stay and watch the scene of the blood and the doctors and nurses talking and drifting along the corridor and seeing my mother grieving, not wanting to be around all that pain. I felt guilty for her pain. And I'm a kid. I go out the window. I don't sort of understand what I'm doing. And I remember there's a theme park along the beach there in Melbourne, Australia, Luna Park, just for fun was the jingle. I want to go play. So I'm traveling without understanding what I'm doing outside my body. My body is back in the operating theater. And I enter the lunar face, the moon round face of the amusement park, and suddenly I'm sucked down into a different world. It felt like a world within the world. And I'm amongst a different people, and they receive me and they welcome me and they raise me. And after a while, I seem to forget that I'm a 9-year-old kid in an operating theater and I'm fully engaged in a life somewhere else. I lived a rich life. I became an elder. I became a grandfather. And in that life, it seemed that when time came for me to pass on, because that body was used up, I'm rising on the smoke of a cremation fire and going up through the green world of growing things, and suddenly I am sucked back into the body of a 9-year-old boy coming out of anesthesia in a Melbourne hospital. So this was a pretty big experience. It gave me the apparent recollection of a life of maybe 90 years lived in whatever it was, and a few minutes perhaps on the operating table. And the problem for me, George, and many of our listeners will empathize with this, is here I am. I'm a 9-year-old kid. I'm in a conservative military family in a conservative era in Australia. Who the heck do you talk to about this kind of thing who's going to take it serious? Oh, poor kid, it's the meds, isn't it? The first person I met in my life who could put this kind of thing in context, and remember, we didn't even have the phrase near-death experience in those days, was an Aboriginal boy from a traditional culture that values dreaming and thinks that dreaming gives us access to the dream time, the place of wisdom, maybe the origin of all the events and situations that manifest in our physical reality. And he would say to me very matter-of-factly things like, "Oh, yeah, we do that kind of thing. We get sick, we go to another place, and when we get well, we come back." So this is where I come from. I mean, I come from the dreaming. I've done different things in my life, but, you know, and I've screwed up in many ways and fallen down, had to get up again, George, but I'll tell you this.
That's life, Robert.
That's life, isn't it? I'll tell you this. I've done better when I've paid attention to dreams, coincidence, and used my imagination than when I have not.
Do we all need to have a near-death experience in order to accomplish this?
Well, you know, I'm here to say no. You do not have to go through the extremity of a near-death experience, but we all need a wake-up call in some form. And one of the things that I'm doing, and I'm inciting people to it in my new book, The Three Only Things, one of the things we need to do is we need to be ready to receive that wake-up call and revision our old attitudes and be ready to dump some of our own old mental habits and baggage and get loose and get free and get on with a richer life. And, you know, we can avoid the near-death experience, we can avoid the trauma or the crisis in other senses if we are willing to rise to the challenge and remake ourselves and revision our lives.
Do you find, Robert, that more people nowadays need to turn into their dream state in order to solve some of their own personal problems?
I think we do. I think we are just so caught up in the business and clutter of the world and all that life is throwing at us that it is very easy for us to forget. any deeper sense of meaning and any deeper logic to our lives. One of the things that I help people to do, and when I meet strangers on planes and they ask me, what do? I will say this. I'll say, I'm a storyteller and I help people to find and to live their bigger stories. One of the things I learned in childhood from the indigenous people of my native Australia was this. The Aborigines say, the big story is hunting the right person to tell it. The big story is hunting the right person to tell it. I love that statement. It's not just about writing and stories. It's about getting in touch with the meaning and purpose of everything. You picture the big story of your life like a predator sniffing and stalking in the bush looking for you. And you know, you are very lucky when the larger story of your life jumps on you and reminds you what it's all about. Why? Because if you have the sense of that deeper drama in the positive sense, it can get you through all that stuff that life throws at you every day.
And dreaming is a very natural, normal experience, and I believe that it has always been part of whatever this universe is made of.
Absolutely. I mean, there are two reasons cross-culturally, and there's a lot of the history of dreaming in my book, The Three Only Things, the new one. But the cross-culturally, across the whole human experience, the whole human enterprise on this planet, George, humans have looked to dreams, both night dreams and visions, for two things above all. They've looked to dreams as a place of interaction between humans and the more than human, between our limited intelligence and deeper intelligence. And they've looked to dreams for knowledge of the future, not just for things that will happen in the future, but for clues to the future that can help us to avoid an undesirable future event or can help us to reach for an event we would like to manifest. I mean, those are two reasons that humans, in every culture probably, apart from modern Western society, those are two reasons why human cultures have valued dreaming.
You call your approach active dreaming. What does that mean, first of all?
Well, the phrase is a provocation, of course, because when we talk about dreams and we take them seriously at all in our society, we so often talk about dreaming as a passive thing. I went to bed, I had a dream. Active dreaming, the phrase stresses a couple of things. The first is that we can be conscious dreamers. We can intentionally enter the dream space, have an adventure, and bring back some gifts and some information. One of my favorite ways of helping people to do that is to say, okay, you remember a dream, you remember something from the night, or you remember something that came to you in an intuitive or a visionary way. Here's how you can learn to go back into that dream space. You've been in that house in your dream, you've been in that lagoon, you've been in that other world. You can learn to go back with clear, focused intention into that scene and do something more. That might mean going beyond a nightmare terror to a point of healing and resolution. It might mean getting more information from inside the dream space, maybe about the future. It might mean talking to your departed grandmother. It might mean developing personal portals to multidimensional reality that you can use again and again and again. So that's one aspect of active dreaming, teaching people that they can embark on wide awake, hyper-conscious journeys into the dream world anytime they like. A second aspect for this is to become 24-hour-a-day dreamers, to learn to recognize messages in the symbols and pop-ups of everyday life, in the play of coincidence and chance encounters. And yet another aspect of it is, of active dreaming, is to recognize that we can help each other. We can help each other to get through. This is very much about helping each other to get through the challenges of life, get in touch with our soul's purpose, and act from that depth. So it's about learning that we can create and hold a space for each other to share experiences, dream experiences, and other experiences of soul, which and give each other non-authoritarian feedback and move each other towards healing and creative actions.